You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Extreme. Existing in a very high degree. Going to great or exaggerated lengths. Exceeding the ordinary, usual, or expected. You know what? WWE Extreme Rules 2017 fulfilled none of those terms.
The least extreme pay-per-view so far this year?
I would actually say, in many ways, the weakest Extreme Rules pay-per-view. And this is Extreme Rules. A pay-per-view with a little bit of an ignominious history. I am Richard.
I'm Gene.
And you are listening, as always, thank you so very much, to Thumbtacks and Screwjobs, part of the OneOfUs.net network of podcasts. We really appreciate you guys listening in for all our opinions and news about wrestling. Don't forget, you can become a member at OneOfUs.net. Memberships start at $2 a month. It's virtually nothing, but it helps keep us on the air. We love doing this, but you know, this does come with costs, and you know, just a couple of bucks a month gets you access to all kinds of additional material, gets you into the forums, gets you old things like the weekly Breakfast Pub news program, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, film commentaries, all kinds of stuff. I know this week we've got a commentary coming up for the remake, the 1999 version of The Mummy, with Matt Frank, who's a good friend of the site and is one of the US's leading kaiju and cinematic monster experts. So that alone is worth the subscription.
I heard that film was a doozy.
Oh, the 99 one's great. The remake is truly terrible. You know how bad it is? It is worse than Scorpion King. Do you remember when the most famous thing about The Rock's Rock's film career was The Scorpion King? And then he went away and went, you know what? I'm going to do some weirder, slightly offbeat, smaller budget indie stuff and some indie action stuff and kind of prove my bones on this and then come back later.
Wise decision.
Wise decision. Paid off. I hear he's not doing too badly.
Not that bad.
He's all sad about Baywatch. Which is final proof. Learn how to make films by working at WWE. Don't learn how to do comedy while working at WWE.
Funny, don't draw money.
Ugh, not in that circumstance. But yeah, we're just a couple of days out from Extreme Rules, which
First match on the card pretty much summed up everything wrong with Extreme Rules 2017.
Well, I mean, let's remember. Let's compare this to last year. Let's just go through the card from last year. Corbin versus Ziggler in a no DQ match. Gallows and Anderson beating the hell out of the Usos in a tornado tag team match. Rusev defeating Kalisto by a brutal submission for the U.S. Championship.
I forgot so many of these guys were already in the company or called up. They've been around that long and still haven't done anything.
The one weak thing, which was only because they botched their push, but the New Day were defeating the Board Villains. The Miz, the famous Why Are You Here match with Cesaro, Kevin Owens, and Sami Zayn, where The Miz won for the Intercontinental Championship, where the only thing The Miz did was come out and be a weaselly heel who got a win that surprised him, and he was no benefit at all to a really excellent match.
Miz 2016, huge resurgence, and I liked him for the majority of the year, but that pay-per-view match he did not need to be a part of.
No. The overly gimmicked Dean Ambrose, Chris Jericho Asylum match, which could have been much better and just was
much better.
They didn't. If they'd have actually just gone, just admitted that what they were doing was basically a ripoff of either Monster's Ball or Raven's Clockwork House of Horrors, they did that, if they'd have just embraced that, but they're not going
to
do
that. Well, the problem with that is they don't know how to book Dean Ambrose. They book him like a goofball.
We will be talking about that in a second. Charlotte defeating Natalya, which is a good match. It was solid. And Reigns defeating Styles, but you know, in an Extreme Rules match, it actually felt like an Extreme Rules match. This year, we kick off with...
This year.
That's the thing. Remember, the purpose of Extreme Rules was that it was a way for them to carry on with the ECW legacy without keeping the ECW brand going. So it was the one one pay-per-view every year where, you know, you were gonna see blood. It was gonna get pretty rough. This version of the WWE will not do that.
Most PG Extreme Rules pay-per-view we've seen since they've owned ECW.
It was also short.
Short of 3 hours.
It was about two or three quarters.
Yes, if you don't count the pre-show, it was 2 hours, 48 minutes.
This was a lot of video package, which is weird because there weren't a big number of matches. Most of them were longer than I expected, apart from one notable exception, which we'll get to. We have the pre-show match of Kalisto defeating Apollo Crews. Because clearly they are trying to destroy Apollo Crews. I don't know what poor Uha Nation did to the WWE.
Well,
how do you fuck up this guy?
They're seeing that they may have brought him up too soon.
Well, I think they brought him up too soon, but they're doing everything to bury him. I mean, this is the most.
Match itself was pretty good. It was shockingly good. Normally, pre-show matches, outside of the Aries Neville match at Mania, they're pretty forgettable, but this one was pretty good. You know, and they seem like they've been pushing Kalisto. If this was his only win in several months, I would just write it off as, okay, they're burying the guy. But, I mean, he does have a victory over Braun Strowman. He does have quite a few victories over the past few months.
He had a win.
As questionable as it was.
It did nothing to get either guy over, because it made Strowman look like a chump, and it made Kalisto look like a guy who could only win by beating a chump, who then beat the tar out of him, and the referee could do nothing. Like, no, nobody looked better.
So there was no point in him winning that match.
It was an okay match. I mean, as dark matches go,
I was expecting
nothing, but clearly they don't care about either of those guys. Apollo Crews can always go out and do a good match. Kalisto, when he's on form and is being, you know, a bit of a dick, as he has a bit of a reputation for, you know, it can turn out a good match. This was all right. There was nothing wrong with it. Whereas it amazes me that we are still in a situation. It's 2017, and other than heel, they have no clue what the Miz's character is. And to have him beat Ambrose in just a weird, awkward,
disqualification would cause the title to change hands. At Extreme Rules.
Yeah.
No one thought that would not
shouldn't
sit well.
Shouldn't this be held over for mild rules at the end of the year? That just seemed like... That was one of those things like, I don't know if you understand your own branding anymore. And it was okay. It wasn't good.
Wasn't their worst match? It was just another Ambrose Miz match.
They've had
6,000 matches over the last 2 years. You know, I'm so done with that.
You know what the only good thing about it was?
What? Ambrose losing the belt because his stock was falling. Every time he has a championship title, it seems like he just becomes the blandest character in the company.
Well, here's the interesting thing. I get the feeling, if you saw Raw this week and saw his promo and saw him come out and basically go, screw you guys, I do wonder whether they've either realized that they're misusing him and they need to let this guy have his head. And somebody finally took some John Moxley promos and went, do you realize that this
what he's
guy,
capable of?
He is one of the best talkers you've ever had, and you've got no idea what to do with it. I mean, honestly, if
they're bad comedy writers,
if there was a good competitor around, if there, or and even and if there was something analogous to ECW around now, he would be over there cutting promos saying, you know, they screwed me over, you know, at WWE, they didn't understand me, and in 6 months' time, they'd hire him back as the hottest guy out there. They've never quite got what he is. And this, and Monday, I saw traces of Jon Moxley. That's what I want from him. I don't want another, you know, if it's got to be him coming out and basically destroying The Miz. Because, you know, the guy's not getting any better. I know there's this weird thing that people want to say, The Miz is getting better, The Miz is getting better. He's better than he was 10 years ago. The guy throws the worst drop kicks in the business. They are abysmal. You know, there's a reason why this was a curtain twitcher match. It's a guy they know is, they're going to give belts to. They're just going to put them on him time and time and time again until the audience
because
is convinced.
He's like John Cena. He does the charity work. He does the news shows. He makes press appearances.
I'm sure he's terribly nice.
That's why they give him all these opportunities.
I'm sure he's terribly nice. He's clearly has been anecdotally reported year after year, you know, just all right, you know. Desperate for attention. And you've got a guy out there, and I'm like, you do not realize how much money you can make off Dean Ambrose.
Although,
you just let him off the leash.
Although Ambrose and Rollins, I'm having my issues with both of them. Part of it's due to their character, whereas Ambrose, the PG setting may be restraining on him, and Rollins just, we clearly do not know what his character. He's just an architect. An architect of what?
Yeah.
Seth freaking Rollins.
I think that's the thing.
What are you talking about?
I think we're starting to see the. That's why I thought this week was good. I got the feeling he's annoyed with where his position is in the company, and maybe that's what he needs to come out and go, you know what? Just let me fix this.
And both of them are kind of guilty of the ... dive. Like, just, they have unnecessary moves in their arsenal, and it causes their selling during matches to become spotty at best.
Oh, yeah. Just well, that's a problem.
It's a problem company-wide, but I'm sorry, Rollins and Ambrose are the worst defenders in the company.
No, Reigns is worse.
Really?
Reigns is worse. Go back and we'll talk about the main event in a bit, but there was a point where he takes a solid, yeah, basically he takes the equivalent of a drive-by from Finn Balor, who adapts the drive-by to do his own version. Because, you know, that's Finn Balor, isn't it? And
okay, I know it's
Reigns. His response was that he fell over and he rubbed his temple. And I'm like, dude, you do not know how to sell. Well, he is the worst of the lot. And I think everything people always say about Cena and, like, you know, he's suddenly back. Reigns is way worse than that. Cena will actually sell a little bit. Reigns falls over, disappears for a while, and that's his version of selling.
Well,
being
the thing is, he's inconsistent. Sometimes he oversells where he's supposed to be this big monster. He shouldn't be selling that much, or those incidents. I don't know. I honestly think Rollins is the worst of the three members. I gotta say, Ambrose is probably third. Reigns, I thought, was third, but you're right. He may be second.
Well,
Rollins, by far.
Well, the problem.
Knee injury, I'm going to do a bunch of dives.
Yeah.
Rib injury, I'm going to do Phoenix splashes and crossbody blocks. Rollins is the worst.
Well, that's the thing. He'll sell, and then he'll do a big move that counters his selling, and then he'll go back to selling. It's like, dude, that's not how it works. And it's not even like the New Japan selling or the Japanese style generally, which is you just get in.
Their testosterone is just so pumped that they're going to get that one last hit in before they pass out.
Breaks them in half themselves
exactly.
To do it. yeah, it was. This was an okay match.
The next,
unlike
the mixed tag.
Oh my god,
the mixed tag.
You know, I'm gonna say it. I will be honest. Anything that feels like we're going to have a match because my girlfriend doesn't like you is the worst booking. I hate it. I absolutely hate it. It's like
WWE trademark.
But if you went to Dana White and said, I want to have this match at UFC 209 because my girlfriend is mad at somebody or my boyfriend is mad at somebody.
No, Dana White would never let it happen because UFC knows how to book correctly and they have no control over the finishes.
Yeah.
And yet they book better wrestling style promos, wrestling style bills to pay per views than the WWE.
Bellator, Mike. But that's a different story.
Wow.
Actually, Bellator are actually getting.
It's improving.
They're improving a lot. They're actually in pretty good condition. But yeah, Rich Swann and Sasha Banks versus Noam Dar and Alicia Fox. One, this is the worst way to get Noam Dar across.
Well,
two, Alicia Fox has been getting better, but this,
she's still not.
This stagnates her horribly. Three, Rich Swann and Sasha Banks. It was, you know, watching them because the, you know, they're trying to play the plot of like, well, you know. Yeah, maybe there's something. And like watching them dance together at the end, there's no chemistry.
Painful.
They're like, yeah, I'm just hanging with my friend. And it was like, it's so undercuts. It's like, why is Rich Swann here in this? Nothing about. I mean, it's better than Carmella and Ellsworth.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's not much of a claim to fame. This was. I watched this and I'm like,
see,
why am I watching this?
I'm enjoying the Noam Dar storyline with Alicia Fox, but on the one hand, some people feel Sasha Banks was demoted and that she pissed someone off in the back. Other people feel that the 205 Live, they're in like desperation mode to get eyes on it, and they're putting a megastar like Sasha on there to get more eyes on it. I think it's a little of A, little of column B.
Well, and this then just raises the question that's been raised by everybody. If you're trying to get eyes on 205 Live, why are you having the cruiserweights on Raw when 205 Live? They need to take that show apart, put it back together.
It needs to not be live. They need to record it at the beginning of SmackDown, not the tail end. That's the biggest problem. The crowd's already dead after 2+ hours of wrestling.
Oh, plus, I mean, they'll have recorded chunks of the main event as well.
Exactly.
So it's like,
and then the dark match.
Yeah, you'll have been there for. You know, it's going on for 4 hours. And the whole thing about SmackDown is, that's been the big advantage is, oh, it's only 2 hours. It's not Raw. You're asking people to make an even bigger commitment than you are for Raw. It's just physically impossible.
Exactly. So you have people that only watch SmackDown. There are some people who may only watch Raw or may only watch SmackDown that because they don't watch Raw, they have no idea who these people
are.
Any
of them are.
So they're not going to watch 205 Live.
Nope. But then you got the... Nothing about this match made you go, this is anything other than fun. And I'm like, this shouldn't be a fun match. It's Extreme Rules. Have this at SummerSlam. Sasha Banks is going to come out, and if you ask her to do a senton onto thumbtacks, she'll do it. Because that's what she does.
That's Sasha Banks.
You know, Alicia Fox, you play up the fact that like her persona has always had this kind of crazy aspect to it. And it's like, if you had a match where you went...
Put a kendo stick in her hand, let her go crazy on everyone.
This was what should have been the kendo stick match.
And even accidentally hit Noam Dar because she just...
Yeah.
Flying rage.
Yeah, whereas the actual kendo stick match... Okay, here's the thing. They've got to this position now where it is utterly clear the WWE does not know, the writers' room does not understand Bayley.
No, not at all.
In the slightest.
And they wrote John Cena. These are the same writers who wrote White Meat Babyface John Cena.
And here's the really weird thing about it. I think they're actually deliberately starting to sabotage her now, because when she came out, half of her floaty guys didn't fully inflate. I'm like...
She got booed.
Yeah.
They did the impossible, the unthinkable. When you watch her at NXT, like, she was meant to have the machine, Vince McMahon's corporate machine backing her. She's the biggest white meat babyface since babyface John Cena. And what do?
Just wreck it. I think the thing is, I don't think they're booing her.
They're booing
the angle.
Yes.
They're booing what they're doing with it. And I actually...
The crowd is smart. Even in cities that weren't considered smart, those fans are now smarter than ever.
Well, I think she started tipping her hand on some of this stuff. That, she said before, oh, I've been watching Tommy Dreamer matches. And I'm like, well, that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Tommy Dreamer never won anything. That was the gimmick. So, but I have actually worked out a way they can salvage this. I mean, the
she can be fixed. I think.
And it's really easy. I mean, one,
like, hire new writers.
If there's a plus, it, you know, this is proving to anybody who was concerned that Alexa Bliss was not ready for this. Alexa Bliss is absolutely ready for the main.
She's ready. She still needs some work ring wise. As far as promos, I think she's probably best. I think she's top Charlotte. Honestly,
she's the best.
Charlotte's become a bit one note.
She's the best promo on the show at the moment. I really think that because she's just come out. She can sell the garbage that they're putting in her mouth. She's a great promo.
She tried her best with that damn This Is Your Life segment.
Yeah, none of that was her fault. That's like blaming, you know, Mick Foley for the original This Is Your Life segment. You can't blame Mick for that. I mean, Mick should have brought it into Landfast, but that's
bro,
not knowledge of it. Even
bro,
you,
it was ingenious, bro.
Yeah, I was very suspicious when they said, when they had a This Is Your Life segment followed by a kendo stick on a pole. It's like, Russo here? Like, this seems suspiciously...
Let me tell you, bro. It's the most ingenious...
But here's how you save Bayley. It's really simple now. You have her do a couple of other really stupid matches like this. And then you have her do what I'm calling a reverse Emma. Because Emma's whole thing was like, she came up to the main roster and the whole I'm going to poke bubbles thing didn't work. It didn't transfer across. And she went, this isn't working. If I'm going to be a success here, I've got to go down to NXT. And I have to be bitter and mean and come up as basically a badass. And that's how it's going to work. You do the complete opposite with Bayley. You have Bayley go
back down to NXT.
You don't even need to send her down to NXT. I mean, actually, although it would be awesome if you had Bayley versus Asuka. Bayley basically goes back to NXT and goes, you know what? I've forgotten who I am. I have to learn to go out there and play by the rules and realize that my connection with the audience is everything to get, and have her be the person that dethrones Asuka. And then have her come back and say, I've learned who I am. You could even have her like, win the belt from Asuka, vacate it that night and say, I know who I am again. And have her come back and put her straight back on the role and bring her and Asuka up at the same time and have Asuka, you know, put her in a main roster feud with Asuka straight away because Asuka goes like, the hell?
No, you're not going to beat me for the championship and then walk away. That makes me look like even lesser of a contender.
And from that moment on, you never break the ass. You have her have Bob Backlund level of consistency of the you know, never breaks a rule face. You do that, and like, you get her over as the biggest face in the business years to come.
I've said it for a while. These writers don't know how to handle her. Send her back to NXT. It worked wonders for Emma. Worked wonders for, Tyson Kidd.
Yeah.
Hell, it needs to happen with Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah. Oh, Dolph with her. God, can you imagine if you sent Dolph down and, you know, just have him as just the embittered veteran who's got to go down and work his way back through the ranks and have Noé Jose go, why are you here again? Oh dear, that's a bit sad.
Hell, put him and Bobby Roode in short-term tag team.
Oh god. Or yeah, have him feud with Roderick Strong.
Agreed.
That would be great.
The segment. I think we skipped over the Drifter segment.
No, we didn't drift over it. We didn't talk about it. There's a difference there.
We don't want to walk with
I it. Hate the Drifter so much.
But is it heel heat or is it go away heat?
It is go away heat. It is just No. Here's why it's go away heat. We've gone, a dark match, which is, you've got the umpteen millionth time the Miz has defeated Dean Ambrose because of some stupid rule moment. You've got a dumb intergender match that didn't make any sense. It wasn't particularly great. And then you got this 5-minute nonsense with a kendo stick. Bayley going, oh, I can be extreme. No, you can't. And it's like a couple of kendo stick blows and that's it. And then
even 5 minutes long.
It was a complete waste. It was 5:10. It was 5:10.
Oh,
but, and then you got the Drifter in there. You know what this was till this point? This was
This An episode was, of Raw?
No, this was Heat. This was Heat in 2002. That's what this was.
Was Sunday Night Heat still on?
I feel, but
or did it become like one of its later iterations?
I remember when did Heat? Yeah, Heat kept going until 2008.
Really?
Yeah.
Did it become an internet show?
No, because it
wow.
It screened in the UK for years.
I was mistaken. I honestly thought by about 02, 03, the show was no longer a thing.
No, because it was an international show.
Okay.
And you know what? It wasn't actually that bad because I go to tapings and you go, oh yeah, it was almost like a house show because like nothing mattered. So you'd have these weird teams and like, but this reinforced that this pay-per-view did not matter.
And it the next match reinforced that the agents and people who booked these matches should have thought about the stipulations a little more. Should we talk about this tag team title match inside steel cage?
The Hardy Boys versus Cesaro and Sheamus. The first real sign that this was actually an Extreme Rules event. Pretty good match. Of course it's going to be a good match.
Pretty good match despite...
Although I did note, I think at one point Jeff Hardy did deliver a receipt to Sheamus.
Oh, you saw it!
Was it a forearm that was stiff?
Stiff as hell!
Everybody looks at Jeff and goes like, oh yeah, he's the tall, lanky one. That guy can put a hurt on you if he wants to. He is tough and he will throw bows.
I've seen a few times in his matches, a few in TNA, some in WWE, where his work punches suck, but there's been a few times I've seen some borderline real punches, and I'm assuming those were receipts.
Oh yeah, this was a receipt. This was clearly a receipt. This was a really good match. I mean, the problem, what I didn't get was
the stipulation of when one member of the team gets out, the other person is still in there with the other two competitors.
Yeah, and also that if the other person goes in and gets them and goes back in, then them being out is negated. It was like this is heading
no pinfalls.
This is heading into reverse battle royale level of complexity. And it was it was really exacerbated by the fact that Sheamus and Cesaro, their timing was a little off. So Jeff had to pull Matt out the door so slowly, and he's like, "Get over!" And they're like, "We're big lads, and we don't do this much. You do this all the time." And it was like, "Oh god damn it!" But other than that, it was just a really solid match. I just don't know why you think it is a good idea to take the belts off of the Hardys right now.
I've been reading a lot of sites. Have been had rumors of Vince wants a solo push for Jeff, so they may split them. I don't think it's going to be a heel turn split. I think it's just they're both probably going to go for solo runs. My thing is, a lot of people still think that that superstar shakeup was the only one of the year. I think we're going to get a real draft sometime later in the year.
Yeah.
And I can foresee Matt going to SmackDown.
Yeah.
Honestly, with Ryan Ward as head writer there, he's the only person I trust with if the broken gimmick legal issues get resolved.
That's the thing, mate.
Ryan Ward, I trust him with that gimmick.
You don't need Jeff for that gimmick. I mean, that would make sense, but I still think it's a little early to split them up, unless you're going to bring them back together.
We're over a year now since the original draft. I'm okay with a little bit of filtering in Raw to SmackDown or vice versa. So we may get Jeff, and these are pre-recorded vignettes. So
I mean, it does also give you an opportunity for I'm not sure exactly where you go from here, but if you could either make Gallows and Anderson a real threat again. I mean, how on earth they've managed to botch those
guys? I don't get it. I don't get it.
I mean, go back and watch anything they did in New Japan where you've got, you know, Carl Anderson, who is basically just a tough little shooter, and Gallows, who comes out and beats the hell out of people. And you've got one of the best tag teams out there.
It's like, how do they... Balor was safe, Styles was safe. I'm concerned with any other Bullet Club members that show up on this damn program.
But I think if they're going to turn the... I think what you have to do with the Raw tag teams at this point is give them much more of a sense of definition. I think the SmackDown tag division is in such a mess.
I don't know. I think it's getting better. The Usos, they cut probably the most entertaining promo they ever have. Although it felt like a babyface promo this past Tuesday where they were clowning on the New Day.
Oh, that was awesome.
That was awesome. And people, I know some people who didn't get the joke. Jimmy Uso simultaneously clowned on Xavier Woods' Iron Sheik inspired shoes and his YouTube video game channel where he goes up, up, now look down, down. What the hell are those on your feet?
No, that was really good. But you know, if you turn this into a vision where you're defining guys, you know, Cesaro and Sheamus, Gallows and Anderson as just hard hitters, and the Revival. And you make it, this is about people who can beat the hell out of
Smash Mouth tag wrestling.
And have that define the style for a while. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I this would be like some
this
really...
This can't just be a bunch of randos thrown together. This needs to be established.
Like classic NWA style pro wrestling.
And I think people would be down with that. I think people would be really happy with that, particularly because the thing you do there is you put the belt on the Revival because it's surprising people. And then you have Gallows and Anderson come in and really... pummelers.
By the way, I will put my idea out there again for the WWE to hire Jim Cornette to run the tag division.
Yes. End of story. You know what? One of the nice things about this pay-per-view, like the first half was grim. Just grim. Let's be honest. It was a chore to sit through. I got bored. I got legitimately bored. It was really like during the intergender tag. I was bored. But you have a really good tag match. And they avoided the thing they always do, which is cooling the crowd down. Because you are not going to cool the crowd down by Neville and Aries. I mean, Aries has admitted he's a bit beaten. He's beaten up and he needs some time off. I don't think particularly long, but he does need some time off.
That's probably why they didn't
put the belt on.
Put the belt on.
These guys are two of the best guys out there.
This is probably the best match. Would have been the best match of the night. I still feel the main event.
Oh, yeah.
By far. But had it not been for that, this would have been match of the night.
And I think, you know, that they managed to book it in a way where it made sense for two high flyers to have a submission match. Because what they do is they high fly and then they try to cripple the other guy enough to actually get a submission. I mean, the only problem was that we then, the next match... also ended on a submission finish, which is like, it seems like you guys, like there was a booking issue there. In some ways, I would have actually...
But WWE is guilty of this all the time.
Maybe this should have gone before the cage match.
Probably.
Possibly so, but the cage match was so extraordinary. And you know, Sheamus and Cesaro, their entrance now is so awesome. It's one of the best entrances in town.
It is.
It got the crowd back. Which it needed. So, you know, it probably benefited from being after, but having two submission finishes in a row is kind of a bit unusual.
Yeah.
But an actually legitimately good main event, which will lead us to an interesting conversation straight after us.
Fatal Five Way, number one contendership for the Universal Championship. So we have Seth Rollins versus Bray Wyatt versus Finn Balor versus Samoa Joe versus Roman Reigns.
And they did the only sensible thing to do at this point, which is put the win on Joe.
Which I called. I got a lot of crap for this because everyone thought it was going to be Seth Rollins.
No.
Really?
Oh, no, okay. It was not going to be Seth Rollins.
I think it's because everyone knows that Great Balls of Fire is going to be a throwaway pay-per-view, and everyone assumed, okay, throwaway pay-per-view, Seth Rollins, who's probably not going to be champion anytime soon, let him eat that loss. I don't think it's going to be a loss with Samoa Joe, my honest thoughts, it's going to end on a draw. It may even end on blood loss for both parties. If they were smart,
yeah,
make this match brutal as hell.
Oh, it's going to be
and have both of them open each other up, and the refs just have to call it because of blood loss on both sides.
Yeah, I mean, I see the logic for that, but
rematch at No Mercy.
Nobody likes stoppage wins anymore.
Well, yeah, we haven't seen a double stoppage loss in WWE probably ever.
Well, also, I think they've got to be very cautious about doing that with Joe because when they did a. When they basically had a timeout when he faced Finn down in NXT.
Where he kept bleeding.
And he kept bleeding, and it took the air out of the room. So I think they're probably going to, if they got any common sense, which they don't,
Type of draw finish
to
be continued so they can get their rematch at No Mercy, have Joe actually win, and let Joe brag about it. And then at Survivor Series, you bring Strowman back into the mix. You have your rematch, but make it a triple threat. Strowman versus Joe versus Lesnar. Have Lesnar get the belt back so he'll be ready for Reigns at Mania.
But everybody in this match looked good.
Everyone did,
Everybody looked good because everybody in it is good. I mean, I got to say...
No one got exposed. No.
Bray Wyatt, realizing he's not going to be able to go toe-to-toe, wrestling-wise with these guys... But as a bruiser and as a manipulator, great. Looks really good at him. Yeah. Him, the bits with him and Joe
on
the teaming
same page,
up
yeah.
and like going like, if we just destroy all these guys, at some point it comes down to us, but we're okay with that.
Increases our chances.
Yeah. Better it's me versus you.
Than me versus you versus him versus him versus him.
Particularly because they're two people who have proved time and time again that they're prepared to get beaten up in a match and they don't care.
Exactly.
They're prepared for the physicality, which is my main complaint about The Miz. The Miz is a Weasley heel. Why would you get in that industry in the first place? Boom. Mic drop. don't drop the mic. It would damage it. But, everybody looked really good. I think the thing I was most impressed with in this match is Joe looked great. Finn Balor looked
Like a star. He looked like a star. At certain times during the match, I was like, this guy's winning it. This guy's winning. But then it clicked in my head, no, they want to save that for a bigger pay-per-view than Great.
Well, my suspicion is that...
Royal Rumble, I call it. Finn Balor versus Brock.
And he beats him. He brings the demon out for it.
I don't know if he's going to beat Brock, but My guess is that the Rumble's where that match is going to happen.
Here's the situation. And as you pointed out online, they are now in a position where they have to make a good... I mean, this shouldn't have been a number one contender match. This should have been a title match because they've broken their own rules. Their own rule book, which they published recently, you have to defend a title every 30 days.
They stripped Naomi of the SmackDown Women's Championship, and it was only about, 26 days?
Yeah.
Of not being able to defend because of an injury. Brock Lesnar, by the time Great Balls of Fire comes out, almost 100 days since he's defended the title.
And this is the thing. They're now saying, they've had their line of, well, it keeps it exciting and special and different when Brock is there. But
don't put the championship on it. He doesn't need the belt. He doesn't.
Yeah. Does it really make it special anymore? Because if whenever he turns up, it's like you're going to see him a few times for 3 months. Then you're going to be like, off for the.
I think the crowd's getting over it.
Oh, I think they're done with it. I think you're going to get
get heckled or booed, but not like heel boo.
No.
Or like, just like go away.
Yeah. I think that's what the situation is. But this was a great match. I mean, that 5 minutes, and it wasn't even like the traditional, he's running wild. Finn going around and dissecting everybody and putting them down for just long enough that he can take out the next guy and then turning his attention to the next guy. And then the first guy gets back up again. He's like, right, no, you're going down again. He looked amazing in this match. And I will also note, go back and watch the double foot stomp onto Reigns. That was stiff. He did not,
He didn't bend his knees.
Finn will educate people in the ring. I've seen him do it before. That if somebody does something stupid, so my suspicion is that Reigns did something dumb in the ring,
possibly.
And that Finn went, okay, I'm not going to break your sternum, but I'm going to give you a couple of bruises you're going to remember in the morning. And he just came out the gate on that. He looked amazing.
they're prepping him for something big.
Well, that's because, you know, he's a guy you can hang the company off. Okay. Honestly, he's a guy. He is a good talker. He is a great worker. He is a guy who sells t-shirts. He sells
I wish he
posters.
Didn't get injured, because if he had not gotten injured, I would think by now we'd be primed for a heel turn.
Hey, when was the last time you saw a buckle bomb?
Well, wait, we got one in this match, didn't we?
We only got one. There was about 6 months ago.
But yeah, we haven't seen it as...
I think it's like, you know, Taker could do pile drivers, nobody else could. This was a great match, and it also set up one of my favorite promos, which was Samoa Joe versus Paul Heyman on Monday. Where
it was a thing of beauty.
And Joe, who knows how this business works, knows how everything about it works so perfectly, just comes out, does the exchange, puts the mic down, knows
that the camera
will pick him up, and just go, now what's about to happen, Paul, is I'm going to put my arms around your neck and you are going to pass out. And the look of fear on Paul's face, and that put the Coquina clutch over pretty much more than anything I've seen, because Paul is a ragdoll in 10 seconds. You're like, this is scary. This is a scary move.
Well, because of Paul, the shape he's in, I kind of not a biggest, the biggest fan of him taking moves in the ring.
Yeah.
You know, I'm worried about his health. I want Paulie to stay around.
Oh, we don't want Paulie to stay around. I mean, I think we are coming to this major problem now that Raw has so much talent, and it's all kept in a holding position because of Brock Lesnar.
In absentia champion?
Yeah, it's a huge mistake. At least on SmackDown, you know, you've got...
Jinder is not on every week, but he's on most weeks.
Well, also, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, it really doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, you're tuning in because you'll go like, okay, the main event. Because the main event for Money in the Bank is yet again going to be Jinder versus Orton. Who cares? I don't care. It's like, oh, well, we're going to have Usos versus New Day, which is going to
be a good match.
You're going to have two Money in the Bank matches, including the first women's Money in the Bank, which if they put together well and don't do anything stupid, is shaping up to be really good, you know.
Although I'm concerned with, I did love Lana's going to be in a match, and with Carmella, those two in a ladder match kind of scare me.
No, I think isn't Lana in the gonna be taking Naomi on 1-on-1? I think she.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think she got the right. Which is like that's good. That's a terrible idea.
No, I think it's a great idea. I don't want her in anywhere near a ladder match.
I don't want her in a match.
Well, yeah, but if she has to be in a match, do you really want her with 10, 15-foot ladders?
Yeah, no.
Not at all.
You know what I do want? I want the mailbox. Thank you again, folks, for sending us a whole bunch of questions. It's just really nice. It really makes our day when people actually like...
They really love us.
I know you got a couple... verbal question. So,
This is a buddy of mine, Chris. He was wondering, had ECW not folded when they did, would it have lasted, and would the company have any legs?
You know what? I think yes. I think the problem is that for them to survive,
they would have had to adapt.
But I think they were. I mean, that was one of the things that, you know, if you listen to Paul Heyman or read any of the books, like, they were moving away. I mean, it wasn't just that they were moving away from the hardcore style. It was like the hardcore style was dying. They knew it was dying. They were like, we need to get away from this. It's because it's not allowing us to grow. It all came down to finances, because they were selling out. They needed a TV deal.
The TV deal helped them and hurt them at the same time.
But the TV deal they had was just, it was a bad deal. They were having trouble getting, you know, with some stuff. But I really do think that if they'd have managed to get that sorted, I see no reason that ECW wouldn't have been.
There were a couple of networks that probably would have given them a chance.
If they'd gotten Spike deal, that would, you know, And they were changing the product. I mean, I think they were looking at.
But didn't TNN become Spike though?
Yeah, but I'm saying it's like if they don't manage to stick around long enough and actually get that, you know,
had WWE not signed with Spike,
if you know Paul had gone, look, the tape library is the tape library. We'll hide this over here. We're going to bring in more luchadors. We're going to bring in more, you know, more of the cruiserweights, which is where he was heading, and more of the technical people. It would have cut that tap off for everybody else because everybody wanted to work there. But if they could have kept the finances sorted, I think there's no doubt that they would have been around. I think they would have got... And to stay around would have meant a better television deal to pay off all the debts, to keep them above water. Better television deal means to get better exposure. I think they would have adapted to that exposure. I think they undoubtedly would have. And I think they probably... They would be... I think they would have been comfortably at the level that TNA was at their best.
Agreed.
Because that was part of why TNA was successful. People said, oh, you know, people were looking for... a WCW replacement. By the end of WCW, the product was so similar to WWE, it was the same market. I think, you know, people wanted something that felt a little bit grittier.
And TNA was, at that point, was different enough.
Which is why Ring of Honor is doing so well at the moment. Ring of Honor, which has a dog slot on a small number of broadcast channels.
Although that may change. Well. That may change with that Sinclair deal that
could well do. Could well do.
I'm hoping... What was the rumor? WGN?
Yeah.
Keeping my fingers crossed. I would like to see them on a better time slot than right now what we get CBS at, like, Saturday nights at 11:30.
11 or 11:30, depending if there's some crazy conspiracy.
Random CSI episode on.
Or just, you know, the Longhorn game runs along and they've got to give extra time. I have no doubt ECW would have... If they could have got past the financial problems, I think where they were positioned as a company... was bad, where they were commissioned as positions as a promotion, I think they were in a really good place. And I think they could have been really impactful.
And that was my all-time favorite promotion, and it was so sad to see it go. But great, Paulie was great, was greatest wrestling mind of the modern era, but one of the worst businessmen.
Oh, terrible businessman. Over to Twitter, from EJ Duprat VVV. Favorite main roster WWE angle of the last few years and favorite Randy Orton match? Just kidding. No, really. In answer to that last one, there is no such thing.
Randy Orton, I think, had decent matches. I think Legacy, from that point on, he's been wrestling the same exact match since 2009.
Oh, yeah.
But he had decent matches prior to then. Decent.
He probably had something good in OVW, I didn't see. favorite main roster angle the last few years. Ooh.
Can I pick?
Yeah.
Oh, see, he didn't specify how far back we're going, but...
Let's say 10 years. Sorry, EJ, I'm cutting an arbitrary 10 years.
Summer Punk.
Yeah.
CM Punk. The first guy to outsell Cena in who knows how long.
Yeah.
Not since Jeff Hardy's championship run. Did someone, especially someone not known to the casual viewers, outsell him merchandise-wise?
I'm with you. I gotta go with Punk.
That Money in the Bank 2011, the build-up towards that match was freaking insane. They kind of dropped the ball by having him come back that very next week.
Yeah, they should have kept him off the air for a couple of weeks, and just had the air of confusion. But even when he came back, it was so good because it was Punk. I think.
And he came back with his Ring of Honor entrance music.
Yeah. Just absolutely perfect. Gilberto Roman, most embarrassing moment in wrestling, and let's go with that first.
Most embarrassing moment, tie.
Yeah.
First one was RoboCop, WCW, which I love World Championship Wrestling, but it's crap like that. That's what I refer to it as WCW.
Wrestling.
Goofy gimmicks. But that and my other one, the debut of the Shockmaster.
That is it. That thing is, the RoboCop one is embarrassing. The Shockmaster is just unfortunate. I got to go with either Viagra on a pole.
Oh, God!
Who was it? It was Shane Douglas and...
Was it Buff Bagwell?
I think it was. I think it was Buff the Stuff. Let me... God. To the internet. But the whole
but
idea...
But you're not seeing exactly what the genius of this...
Shane Douglas versus Billy Kidman.
Of this match, bro.
But the whole idea is like... So basically it's two guys saying they can't get boners. How does this get anybody over... That was such a, there's everything there. You're just watching it. And you're just like, you can see the cars crashing. I gotta say, although it's either that or the look on Vince's face when he blows his quads out from walking, and I'm like, you dick.
See, I can't even laugh at that one. That one's more like I felt bad. I really felt bad. That's not an injury that I can, like, ha ha ha, but it was quite, that was a quite unfortunate one.
Yeah. And, second question, if you had to show one match to someone who hates wrestling, and your intent is to bring them to your side, what match would you select?
Oh, that's a
good one. Three.
Yeah?
Actually, I'm sorry, four. I'm really... If we could take the entire Best of Seven series between Booker T and Chris Benoit mm-hmm. and condense it into like one...
Although you're kind of hurting your own argument there, because they're going to say, so who are those guys? And you go, well, that's Booker T.
Oh.
He did armed robbery. And that guy, there, yeah, no.
See, so I hate, like I say, I don't condone what he did.
But it's, I'm just saying it's a problem for you.
Yeah, no, it's problematic. It's just, as a performer, that series of matches... I want to say Ric Flair Fujinami.
Hmm. Good one.
Damn it, it's going to wind up being five. Okay. Those two. Omega Okada at this year's Wrestle Kingdom.
Good one.
Sami Zayn, Shinsuke Nakamura. Nakamura's debut at NXT last year.
Yeah.
And I'm leaning towards either Brett versus Austin in their I Quit match or Foley Undertaker Hell in a Cell.
I'm gonna go with I don't know, Punk Cena.
Yeah, because Money in the Bank.
Yeah, because yeah. I think everything, if you go back and watch that, you don't need to know the backstory to understand the story.
They told their story in
they
the ring.
They did
yeah.
everything. Taker Michaels.
Mania 25.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's a...
I can easily see that.
Yeah. Omega Okada. I think that's a
brilliant match.
A really just stellar match.
There were a couple of Jerry Lynn, Rob Van Dam matches that I could have listed, and Taz Sabu matches I could have, but that's preference.
Oh, no,
what was the best match?
Yeah, some of those, you can throw one of those in. I'd also have to say the original Dudley's Christian... Hardy's TLC match.
Okay.
Because I think I'll look at that. I'm trying to think of something. I mean, honestly, you know, there's a whole bunch of Roderick Strong matches I could put in there because I think people like Roddy. Or
Nakamura, Ibushi from 2 years ago at Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah. No, any of those would be great. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. One last one. Styles versus Daniels versus Joe. What was it? What pay-per-view was that? Lockdown 2005? No, not Lockdown. I'm sorry. Ah, crap. You can look it up. Christopher Daniels versus AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe. That was possibly the greatest triple threat match I have ever seen.
Or the, any of the Punk Joe run, any of the... honestly, I think I actually may have to go with any of the just straight out Styles Daniels matches.
Yeah,
because they were just. In fact, I'm going to go with those because I think they're just great matches between two guys of the absolute height who can do everything.
But they didn't do everything. No. They could do everything, but they pick and choose their match style, the tempo perfectly every time.
I think those. I'll go with those. Okay. Any of those? Trav Moody. Who do you want to see have an NXT run?
NXT championship.
NXT title run.
I say Kenta's overdue.
I'm going to go with Kenta and Roderick Strong.
I'm sorry, for Hideo Itami, if...
And clearly they're heading on a heel turn with him. I think I want Kenta, I want...
Roddy Strong, likely 2018.
And I want Chris Hero. I want all three of them.
Agreed.
All three of those, I think...
I don't see Rude dropping the belt to Kenta directly. If it happens... It's going to be in a triple threat match.
And Nikki
with
Cross.
The other guy. Yes.
Nikki Cross, I want to see Nikki
for the women's. She's ready. She's ready.
She's more than ready. And it's a great character. She does it so well. She does
the Rosemary gimmick better than Rosemary.
Oh, yeah. That's saying something. Johnny Stoll. I feel that Starrcade 97 is the worst match of the night of the modern era, which is a good contender. My brother argues that Lesnar versus Goldberg at WrestleMania 20 is the worst. Which one do you think it is?
We had this question last... Well, not this question, but someone asked about worst match of the modern era.
Yeah.
And I think I listed those two. Maybe this was in response to my comment that it's a tie between these two.
Yeah.
But if we have to choose a clear winner of worst match... See...
Well, let's go between those two.
Lesnar and Goldberg was horrific, but it was just those two that screwed up. With the Hogan Sting match, you had the ref blowing, was supposed to do a fast count and didn't do a fast count. I don't think any action was taken against him after the match for screwing that up. The biggest finish of your biggest match of your company's history. I'm leaning towards the Hogan Sting one just because of the implications and the fact that that really should have been where the NWO angle ended. It was the natural ending to that year and a half long storyline.
I think I'm going to go with that because, Lesnar...
And Sting not coming back in shape either.
Lesnar Goldberg was just two guys just pushing each other and heading out.
And we knew what we were getting into because they were both leaving.
I think if I'm going to pick one other than that, I've got to go with Sting Jeff Hardy Victory Road 2011. 89 seconds.
I don't want to count that.
Never should have happened. They never should have let those guys in the ring.
No,
Jeff
I agree.
Was clearly not fit to be there, and they should never let that match happen. Go watch it. Or there's always the infamous My Vag match, which is
Jenna Maraska versus
No.
That was Jenna Maraska versus Charmel, which is probably the second worst TNA match of all time. Number one was the one from the Survivor. I forgot her name.
Yeah, just everything about. TNA had so many great female wrestlers and pushed the worst possibles. Okay, Samantha Assar, which we can't attack. Do you think the new Sinclair Broadcasting business deal will convince them to finally put some respectable money into Ring of Honor and to give them a high-profile weekly broadcast? Hopefully so, yes. I don't know,
I pray that they do. There's still people that don't want to consider ROH the number two company in the States. They still want to count TNA because of the time slots alone and the fact that TNA looks like they put some money into their production, whereas ROH, they clearly still don't.
Yeah. No, I mean, ROH does all that with nothing.
Exactly.
Okay.
I have one last thing. I've been pretty critical of Season 3 of Lucha Underground.
Oh, yeah.
They made their return last week.
How was it?
It was great. All night long match between Johnny Mundo and the Mac.
I heard that actually paid off.
They are making the Mac into their next big... I don't want to say Stone Cold, but it so feels like the Bret Hart Stone Cold feud, or actually Shawn Michaels Stone Cold feud. And the Mac is going to probably win the belt sometime in the near future. It was a 1 hour Iron Man match, but it was a weapons, everything, anything goes Iron Man match.
Nice.
And it ended on a draw. And of course, Dario Cueto the best authority figure in pro wrestling right now, came out and shouted, "There are no ties in Lucha Underground!" So they had a rematch this week, which, due to interference by the rest of Worldwide Underground, Johnny Mundo retained, but they're setting up a 32-man Ultima Lucha tournament to determine a number one contender for Johnny Mundo, but also the winner of that faces the winner of Mundo and Rey Mysterio, which is going to be a stellar match. All of my complaints about the show season 3, non-existent here these last two episodes. They've righted the ship thus far. I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah. It's had a rocky, you know, rocky season 3.0, but 3.1 seems to have really, from everything I've heard, is...
Hopefully they rejigger the commentary. It will be one of my favorite shows to watch each week.
Yeah,
sorry, Matt Stryker, but you're not doing it for me.
It's not as bad as TNA thinking that that's actually something you can hang the company off is you know, gimmicky announcer stuff. Speaking of Johnny Mundo, he is in Glow, the new Netflix series. Which I will have a full report on very soon. Awesome.
I'm going to check that out.
In fact, because it's...
How many episodes is...
There's going to be 10 episodes, and it's going to hit Netflix on June 26th, I think.
Okay.
But I will actually be talking to Alison Brie, who's on Stars this weekend. But Johnny Mundo is actually in that.
Awesome.
As is Mark Maron, who is a huge wrestling nerd. I'm seeing the first episode pretty soon.
I'm gonna binge that the first weekend at a time.
Yeah, I mean it's half hour episodes.
So easy to digest.
Multi camera kind of drama sitcom. It's looking promising. It's very fictionalized. Nobody's using their real name. So yeah, Johnny Mundo is actually in it as the trainer. So yeah, but anyway. I think we've rattled through a hell of a lot of, we got Money in the Bank coming up soon. That's a more problem.
Two weeks.
God,
they said less pay-per-views this year, didn't they?
Is there going to be nothing after SummerSlam? Is it going to be this giant void? I'm trying to work out,
is there a September paper? No Mercy's October, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know why they're running through all these, particularly and throwing,
This is three pay-per-views in 6 weeks.
Yeah. When's the next one? And they're back in St. Louis again after it.
Yeah, which makes me think Orton's not winning that belt back. Which is fine with me. People can say what they want about gender, and I'm not the biggest fan. Better him.
Well, I mean, because we got Money in the Bank on June... Oh, but yeah. Talk about yourself, folks. That's June 18th, and then Great Balls of Fire is July 2nd, I want to say? Oh, July 9th, and then Battleground...
That's another 2 weeks.
...is July 23rd.
That's another 2 weeks!
Yeah.
There's not less pay-per-views this year.
There's more.
There's more, and they said less.
Yeah, this is kind of ridiculous, I know.
Kind of.
Maybe
going to ludicrous speed with... Pay-per-view
I don't know why they think that this is good scheduling, because then that's not long until, because SummerSlam's August this year, I want to say. This calendar is just going to kill us. I think they're going to see ratings drop because people aren't going to want to watch everything, and more importantly, it hurts everything else. It hurts 205 Live. It hurts NXT, although there's enough people who are just like, I'm just going to pay. I will happily spend $10 a month for NXT and TakeOver.
Agree.
And occasionally dropping into other stuff. But I think it kills the TV. And that's the other thing. The TV ratings have been in the crapper.
Too much content.
Everybody's getting to the point of where, Brian and Vinny at Wrestling Observer were 5 years ago going like, I'm watching too much wrestling. And I think it's hurting.
Agreed. Really? On pay-per-view weeks? So on an average week, if you count 205 Live and NXT, that's 7 hours. On pay-per-view weeks, that can run up to 11 to 12 hours worth of content, just WWE-wise.
Yeah. It's
and that's not even counting Superstars or Main Event.
And I've got to say, I'm still having most fun just watching an hour of Ring of Honor at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night.
Ring of Honor, Lucha Underground, hell, TNA. I'm still enjoying it. It's not as good. The new owners, we'll see where this goes, but I have faith that they'll get stuff sorted out.
Well, I think we've bent your ears for far too long, so thank you, as always, for tuning in. We really do appreciate people who download the show. Don't forget, as we said, you can always become a subscriber to one of us. It does keep the lights on. You can catch me every week on oneofus.net, usually on Highly Suspect Reviews, also at austinchronicle.com and in the print edition of the Austin Chronicle. Gene?
Twitter?
Oh, on Twitter, at YorkshireTX.
Okay, and I'm on Twitter at Gene Selassie, and I'm also on oneofus.net at Smark Country, and also catch me at thescrumsports.com.
Hurrah! So, thank you as always, and we will see you soon. Ding, ding!
This will not be extreme.
No.